learned a lesson on current events. Instead, I studied the old American West. I was never taught what laws there are. Let me repeat, I was not taught the laws for the country I live in. But I know how Henry VIII killed his women. Divorced, beheaded, died. Divorced, beheaded, survived. Glad that's in my head instead of financial advice. I was shown the wavelengths of different hues of light. But I was never taught my human rights. Apparently there's 30. Do you know them? I don't. Why the hell can't we both recite them by rote? I know igneous, metamorphic, and sedimentary rocks, yet I don't know squat about trading stocks or how money works at all. Where does it come from? How does the thing that motivates the world function? Not taught to budget and disperse my earnings. I was too busy there rehearsing cursive. Didn't learn how much it costs to raise a kid or what an affidavit is. But I spent days on what the quadratic equation is. Negative b plus or minus the square root of b squared minus 4ac over 2a. That's insane. That's absolutely insane. They maybe learned that over basic first aid, or how to recognize the most deadly mental disorders or diseases with preventable causes, or how to buy a house with a mortgage if I could afford it, because abstract maths was deemed more important than advice that would literally save thousands of lives. But it's cool, because now I could tell you if the number of unnecessary deaths caused by that choice was prime.
Hey everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is September 16th. This is my first conversation with David Brown, better known as Boy in a Band on YouTube. I've wanted to have a conversation with Dave ever since, I guess it was probably 16 months ago, since he put out his video, Don't Stay in School. So we have an interesting first conversation. Dave and I, very different backgrounds, obviously, very different interests, very different viewpoints. So it's nice that we could come together on the issue of educational freedom. But what you're going to hear today is honestly just my attempt to bring two different worlds together. I think there's a lot of people in Dave's audience who would benefit from what we do here at the School Sucks Project. And I think Dave has done a really terrific job, and you'll hear me compliment him on this in the show, of reaching a younger audience with a very important message. And he has added a new video called You Don't Legally Have to Go to School. It's about 20 minutes in length. It's linked in the show notes. He talks about his investigations into what freedoms people have as students and what options exist. So I think it's terrific that he's using his platform to promote these ideas. And I just wanted to, you know, voice my encouragement and maybe compare notes a little bit. I'm not, however, going to put this show on Patreon because I don't really feel like it covers enough new ground. I'll tell you that up front. For those of you who've been listening for a while, it's a lot of review. But what I'd like to do as soon as I have some time, and time is very limited right now due to some circumstances outside of the show, I'd like to record a better explanation of the Sudbury philosophy and the history of the constructivist theory of education, which is different from constructivism applied to knowledge generally. It's something that we're going to touch on in the show, but I wish we would have had more time to go into it. So if you're a patron, you can look forward to that sometime in the next week. Anyway, I encourage you to check out Dave's YouTube channel, Boy in a Band, and I've linked in the show notes to our previous conversations about Sudbury. It's a fascinating subject, and I'm really on the fence about the Sudbury model in so many ways, even though as far as the educational environment is concerned, it's so superior to what we see in government school or even most private schools. But there are philosophical questions that I have, and I will address that in an upcoming show. So thanks, everybody, for listening. I hope you have a great weekend. Christina Hoff Summers and I had to reschedule, so I still have time to take more questions. I actually sought questions from libertarian feminists for that discussion, and there's a thread about it in the Facebook group, so if you want to jump in there, please do. That's happening Monday the 19th, so plenty of time left. All right, everybody, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again soon.
I've tried to keep this video fun so it's easier to get through, but when it comes to what to do about all this, I'm just not sure. It's incredibly difficult and frustrating. There are some people who will just be stuck because they can't afford it, or because there aren't any alternative schools nearby, and that sucks. But for those other students, if their parents are willing to listen and treat them with respect, even when their school does not, they might be able to join a system where they're happier and better prepared for real life. It's ridiculous that there aren't more studies done on this. It was so hard to find the little data I could for this video. But my strongest feelings were explained really well by that girl's dad, who happened to be a teacher who ended up changing jobs to work at the Sudbury School.
I was teaching physics, so I had kids that were 17 or 18 years old, But because it's a mass-produced system, they had to get my written permission to go to the bathroom. Where else in adult society does that happen? The only place I can think of is prison. There's a profound underlying disrespect inherent in that system, and it's not the fault of the teachers, it's not the fault of the administrators, it's not the fault of any particular person or group in the system. It's the system itself. The way the institution was set up is profoundly disrespectful to children, and they don't learn very well in that system. I felt that disrespect, and I saw it in my students' behavior, at least the ones who were most awake and aware. More scary was the incredibly intelligent, well-adjusted students who didn't even notice that they were being disrespected.
I just can't believe how many people are forced into a system that's possibly damaging their employability, health, and happiness. Look how many people commenting on this video had no idea there were alternatives legally available. So if you want to help, all I can suggest right now is to talk to people about it. If school won't teach them there are other choices, you can instead.
I'm very pleased to welcome, for the first time, to the School Sucks podcast, YouTube sensation, boy in a band, aka David Brown. Hi, David.
Hi. Well, that's quite a compliment to start with. Thank you.
Well, absolutely. Your work is sensational. And we actually did a show last year on School Sucks podcast based on one of your earlier videos, Don't Stay in School.
That's really cool.
You recently put out another one that we're going to talk about today called You Don't Legally Have to Go to School. So It sounds like through some of your work, you have a message similar to ours at the School Sucks Project. I want to start by saying thank you. From where I stand, what you're doing is extremely valuable. And the way you've gone about doing it is pretty sweet, too. You start with this very provocative 3-minute rap video. In come the subscribers. A year later, you're back talking about what rights and options people actually have as students. So I really, really appreciate your amplification of this educational freedom message. I wanted to talk a little bit, just in introductions here, how did you start and why the Boy in the Band YouTube channel? What's behind it?
The channel itself was started quite a while ago. Initially, it was kind of an experiment to see if I could get people to my blog at the time, boyinaband.com, by making tutorials about electronic music. And that's where I kind of began. I've always liked making various different genres of music. Yeah, I started out making tutorials, and then I got, after making literally about 200 of those, I got a bit sick of it. So I moved towards making a variety of different content, like vlogs and songs of my own and things like that. And since, like, I decided to kind of move away from the tutorials, I've been a lot happier doing what I do, and I've built like quite a big audience around the type of content that I've been doing. I'm quite surprised that there are that many people that are interested in the types of topics that I talk about. I think that's what I was trying to get across.
Absolutely, yeah. It's interesting because you think about a way to rake in a lot of subscribers is doing those tutorial videos, especially on something that's always evolving, like electronic music, where people are going to be coming back to you and you can build trust. But since, and maybe this was happening before I first heard about you with the Don't Stay in School video, it seems like you've been attracting people for other reasons, people who are really interested in actually what your message is. So I think a lot of people might see that video that you made last year and suspect that there's a larger political message that you're trying to push with your channel, like don't stay in school. Is there a personal philosophy that guides your work?
I'd say it's like being really scientific as much as possible. That's probably the fundamental thing, like being utilitarian and scientific about whatever you do. Trying to find the most effective way to do the most good kind of thing. I get very frustrated when I do projects and I don't really learn anything from them. So I try and track progress and I try and get sources, and it takes a hell of a lot of time to do these kinds of things. And it's something that I've been doing more recently. There were videos in the past where I don't feel like I did that much research, and I just started to feel kind of bad that they were out there and probably not as accurate as I might like. And yeah, it takes a lot of effort, and that's something I'm struggling with recently, and part of the reason I took the year off. But I think that's the fundamental part of my channel if I say there is some kind of message, it's to try and be scientific with how you go about doing useful things.
Excellent. Excellent. So let's talk about this video that first brought you to the attention of a lot of people in my audience, Don't Stay in School. And I'd like to discuss the response to, the impact of, and possibly even the fallout from that project. I saw you posted on your channel recently that there's this YouTube series called React, where they basically film people reacting to other videos. I wanted to just talk first, before I give you some impressions that I had of watching people react to Don't Stay in School, or parents react to Don't Stay in School, which is important, especially since a lot of those parents seem to be teachers. What kind of feedback have you gathered, especially from young people?
The feedback from young people has overwhelmingly been, yes, I think this so much. Thank you for saying it out loud.
Yeah.
Which is... I didn't know the kind of response I would get, because it was just something that I felt really strongly ever since I was in school and stuck there in that system. So from young people, there's a few people who think that by using the clickbaity type of title, I might be discouraging people from going to school, even though, like, in the lyrics I specifically mention at the end, it's the pointless topics that I want to not stay in school, not the people. But loads of people have specifically said that they understand, like young people, they understand that that's not the message of the song. The message of the song is to make school do more useful things. And the adults, generally the response from them, it might be the bias to the people who care enough to actually say something, but it tends to be people who are really supportive of the message as well.
Well, it's interesting because you mentioned, like, the actual Don't Stay in School refers to getting a lot of the antiquated crap out of the
yes.
schools, right?
Well phrased.
And I think that's something that we could talk a little bit more about. I thought that in that React video, it was interesting how much agreement there was with the specifics of your message from the parents, right? It was like lyric after lyric, they were saying, yeah, that's true. But then when it came to their impressions of the title, which I think a lot of them interpreted as actually kids get out of school, they balked at that, right? They didn't like that message. And I'm wondering with this latest video that we'll get into in more detail in the future, if your thinking is evolving a little bit on the whole staying in school thing, now that you realize, well, there's not just one way to, I don't even want to say do education, because I actually make a pretty significant distinction between schooling and education. As I think you probably would as well. Just being in school doesn't mean you're getting an education. So are you expanding now beyond just like, let's get the negative stuff or the antiquated stuff out of school, and maybe like a lot of young people would be better served if they went someplace else and did something else?
I think that's a really difficult thing to say, as like, I wouldn't want to say definitely yes, because
sure.
there's not very much data. I did a lot of looking for studies and things like that on unschooling and Sudbury schools and alternative schooling systems. Obviously, I'm not an expert, but so far what I've seen is that the Sudbury schools and the unschooling tend to get a vibe of people being happier doing what they're doing and it not really having any negative effect. In fact, from some of the data, it seemed to have a positive effect on people's careers, being able to do things they enjoyed more often and things like that. It's just incredibly difficult to change a system on the scale that is necessary to practically say, yes, that's the wrong thing, let's immediately change it. I think there's a lot more conversation that's got to be had to try and figure out a method of changing that system. I don't know whether it is trying to make more private schools more affordable or to do something online or whatever. But yeah, I think that there is some evidence saying that staying out of school in kind of unschooling environments and alternative schools is a good idea.
You talked about this actually in the video. You don't legally have to go to school. There was a challenge in doing research that there wasn't a lot of data on alternative schooling in the United States and Great Britain and elsewhere. Was that the
problem? It's freaking crazy, to be honest. You'd think that something as important as education, there'd be a crap ton of government funding into educations, into studies into this kind of education.
Yeah.
But apparently not. It seems quite rare. Like Bill Gates was doing one of the biggest charter school studies, and, well, not him personally, but Like, it seems like something that more people would be interested in funding.
Did you happen across any information about the origins of the schools or the ideologies behind the very idea of government-run public schools in your research?
I don't think I looked at the starting point, but yeah, do you have a story to tell?
Gosh, I have so many stories to tell. We only have an hour. I was hoping, I know you can help a lot of the people that I try to reach a lot, and I was hoping that maybe I could, return the favor and help out maybe some of the people that you try to reach as well. The origins of the school system in the United States are actually quite dark. And when the systems were originally being adopted in like the 1850s and the 1860s.
Oh, is this the Prussian system?
Yeah, people were in the streets with pitchforks, metaphorically, over yeah. this. They thought this idea of turning their children over to strangers was completely antithetical to the values that they understood, for this country, the United States. Once it was in place for a generation or two, that system just became the norm. And, now people say, how would we ever live without it? Which is unfortunate, not knowing the history of it. So you were familiar with the Prussian model to some extent.
I thought you meant government-run alternative schools.
Well,
I thought you were explaining where charter schooling and stuff came from or whatever.
What a world of difference then. Yeah, so a little bit about the Prussian model?
A little bit, yes. I know that there are some quotes floating around. Some people think that it was started to keep people in line and things like that after a big war, and in order to try and keep the citizens of Prussia in line so that they could fight the next war or they were prepared for something like that. But yeah, it seemed pretty scary, man.
Yeah, and now, obviously, that paints a very dark picture of, America in 2016 or Great Britain in 2016 to think that that's what we inherit. And obviously, that's not the whole story. The schools had a progressive revolution or a really important and significant and impactful reform kind of effort in the beginning of the 20th century with people like John Dewey, who you might have come across in your research or you might be familiar with otherwise. And they wanted to change that really authoritarian structure that the schools had adopted. Americans at that time, just like it was less the case in Britain, but they felt like they needed that system that was like this really strong mold that they could put people into, because here we had so many people immigrating from, other countries. People were worried about like losing American culture.
Yeah, I've heard that as an argument for why Germany doesn't allow homeschooling. Like, I don't know how true it is, but that there are people in Germany who worry that because there are so many refugees coming in and things like that, that if you allow too much homeschooling, then you'll get pockets of people who aren't adapting to the culture of the country, and people are worried that they might lose their country's culture.
Yeah.
I think it's quite interesting. I didn't even consider that as a factor.
There's lots of arguments that lots of people make for lots of different reasons against homeschooling and in all different countries, which is really unfortunate, as you probably learned from, the research you did on homeschooling and unschooling in this latest video. But it really seemed like in those 20 minutes, what emerged was you were a very, very big fan of the Sudbury model. Is that fair to say?
It seems freaking cool. I wish I got to go to something like that.
Yeah.
I feel like ever since I left school, the Sudbury model is kind of what I've been following, just naturally, just trying to find things that interest me and follow in that direction. And if I'd started that at age 8, then God knows where I'd be now. Probably way better at producing music.
Well, what was school like for you?
I was like the nerdy kid. I was always getting the higher grades and not having many friends kind of thing. I had like a kind of epiphany moment in year 9 in England, which is, I don't know what the equivalent grade is in the USA. I was probably like 13, 14, where I was just, I realized I had no reason to be doing anything I was doing. I didn't care about it. So I stopped putting in the effort and I just kind of coasted from all the effort I'd put in prior to that. And it was around then that I started to take an interest in more creative things like, because I used to hate creativity. I used to hate music. I used to hate everything that wasn't solid academia.
Really?
Because Yeah. I used to be like as a proper nerdy kid, like into science and business and everything. But once I had that kind of realization, I started taking an interest in how to make animations. And from there, I got into kind of music because a lot of the animations that I watched had music in them, and started to get into all the angsty teen bands at the time and wanted to make my own angsty teen music.
Right.
So, which I still do. But yeah, it was quite a trapped feeling. Like I felt for those last 3 years of school, particularly just feeling, why am I stuck here? This is not what I want to be spending my time doing. It's not useful.
It sounds like we had very, very similar experiences. How were your grades and performance in school once you started to feel that way? Mine weren't good.
Oh, mine kind of went just above average, maybe, but it wasn't spectacular at all. Like after I stopped putting in the effort.
Yeah. So you feel like if you hadn't had that trap feeling, like if you had been in the Sudbury model the whole time, you would have flourished more. You would have, you know, found more opportunities. Maybe you would have discovered the things that you loved sooner.
Definitely. I'd have probably learned programming or something and been way richer than I am now. I don't know. But yeah, it just seems really sad that people aren't allowed to explore the things that they're really passionate about. Like I in school, very often showed a really deep passion for computers, and none of the teachers really picked up on that. And it seems sad to think how many people are sitting there in their maths class showing a really big aptitude for maths, but they aren't being, the teachers don't have the time or the freedom to push those kids in a direction that might really enhance their learning in that direction, or which might happen in a Sudbury school where they see someone taking an interest in something, they might be like, oh, have you seen this or whatever? I don't know.
Yeah. You know, it was really cool in the video that you just made. You had questions about Sudbury. So you went and you interviewed a Sudbury student. Then you had more questions about Sudbury. So you found her parents and interviewed them. And her father had actually been a public school teacher who once
transitioned.
His daughter had this experience in the Sudbury school. He left his public school teaching job, which is, you know, there's a lot of debate about that here in the United States. But once you've been there a while, it's a pretty cushy job. The benefits are good. The pay relative to a number of hours worked per year is really good. It's, you know, $50, $60 an hour. That's a big risk, especially when your job is going to have a pension, to leave and go and work for a private Sudbury school. So that was really moving for me. But one of the things that he said was, you know, it's not any one person's fault. I think a lot of people, you know, they go through, especially high school, when you get to that age where like adults just aren't really as impressive as they once were. Like, you know, when you're a small little lad and they can drive cars and they can cook food, it's like, well, thank God for you people. But by the time you're like 14, 15 years old, it's like, none of that's impressive anymore. You can do that stuff. So you start to rebel, whether it's very visible or it's more internal. It's a very, very natural process at that age, even biologically, to like want to leave the nest. So what was my point? I'm sorry. I was on a roll with
it's
that.
It's passion. It's fun.
And then there were too many little things that I put in along the way. What was I trying to say?
It's not one person's fault.
The father, right? So as we reach that more rebellious stage, we'd say, oh, that teacher, or oh, that teacher, or oh, this principal. But, you know, the father of that Sudbury girl in your video, he said, it's not a person. It's the system. So all these opportunities are lost, which I think is what you're talking about when you say teachers don't notice these things. How could they? How would they ever have time to notice what one individual student really wants? They might take note of it in passing, but the job just isn't really, you know, set up that way. And I think in a lot of respects, they become victims of the system as well. A lot of the teachers that I talk to, they go in very, very passionate, and they really, really feel like it's a job where they're going to make a difference. And you contrast them to the old man who falls asleep at his desk, right? What I started to realize just from, you know, reflecting on my 12 years as a student and then my 12 years working in the system, those two different guys are the same guy. What separates them is time. What separates them is the amount of exposure they've had to what is, for too many people, a really, really frustrating system. It seems like very, very few educators survive that process. And they, like students, are worn down by the system as well. Do you feel like that's true where you are, what you experienced in school?
I've got some friends who are teachers, and there's a YouTuber called CGP Grey, for instance, who's a really cool guy, and I've hung out with him a few times, and we were chatting about this, and he was saying that there was no incentive for him to be more creative with his job. The incentive was for him to follow the structure that was already there, because it was like so much easier. If he wanted any time to himself, then it's going to be incredibly difficult. I might be paraphrasing him, so don't quote me exactly on this. But it was this kind of feeling that because he didn't have the ability to be creative, that's going to make anyone hate their job eventually. If you're doing the same crap over and over again with no kind of feeling of progress.
And I wonder, we went and we actually toured a Sudbury school for the show, the original Sudbury school, which is in Massachusetts. Maybe 3 years ago, we went and we toured it. Obviously, the adults who are there, different attitude completely. Very energetic, very, very enthusiastic. And I think that having that more hands-off approach where you're not always at odds or you're not always doing this enforcement role really helps people maintain that passion that they have. In the video, you raised this question about Sudbury being utopian, but this story about this, I guess it was like a British reform school that had adopted a less authoritarian approach to dealing with some really difficult students. Would you mind just taking a minute or so to relay that to my audience? Because I thought that was really important.
I found this documentary, a couple of episodes of this school. I think it was called the Ian Mikado High School in London. And they took some of the most, literally the most, they called unteachable students, and brought them all together into this school to try and teach them and to get them good jobs or whatever. And initially, before this new headmistress with this kind of more of a similar to the Sudbury model, more of an open approach to teaching came along, 97%, I think it was, of the students went to prison. And after she came along and stopped enforcing them and like pushing them into classrooms every time and like making them do things and kind of giving them more freedom over their own learning and choosing what they actually did with their lives, 0% of them went to prison, and a large portion of them went on to further education or employment. And it's just a hell of a insight into what can happen if you give, like, particularly some of the people who people would reference as reasons not to do this type of education.
Right.
Like that can fix those people's lives.
Yeah. You know, it's almost a kind of self-fulfilling prophecy too, right? We need this kind of strict, top-down, authoritarian, rule-driven education because look at what some people are. Look how some people behave. Well, what kind of system reinforces that behavior?
Exactly.
The system that completely treats them like they can't be trusted. You know, one of the things that you talk about in the dialogues between boy and dad in the video that were great was, school making people good citizens. Well, my observations here in the United States are we have a lot of like very, very obedient and unquestioning people. We have the largest scale disaster politically in my life coming up with the choices we have for president.
What you're talking about.
In 2016, it's terrifying. It's like, how did this happen? How like little thought went into like these people being the two best people? So, yeah, we have a society here that talks about things like questioning authority, which is basically an empty cliche because no one actually does it in any way that's meaningful. School does produce good citizens as far as, you know, I think our current government is concerned. You know,
in kind of a military way, I suppose. Yes,
a regimented way, an obedient
way.
You know, the first shows that I did for School Sucks, I said, I think school has three hidden lessons. I think they're obedience, conformity, and a kind of intellectual apathy. And one leads to the next. You know, you get in line, you stay in line, and while you're in line and forced to stay there, you really don't want to think about that situation too much because it really, really sucks to be there. So the promise of public schools here is true. They did produce good citizens, as far as like one definition of citizenship is concerned, certainly not mine. But yeah, so we have this self-fulfilling prophecy of schools need to be strict and authoritarian because look how dangerous some people are. I was moved by your including that story about that British reform school in your video, because in 2003, I was the lead teacher of a really, really restrictive specialized program for kids who had what they called at the time sexually reactive behavior. Basically, kids who had been through some kind of sexual abuse and had replicated that abuse on others. So they were in this almost locked down environment where a story that I've told multiple times on my show is if the kids were in a like a lounge, like the TV room watching TV, and a staff walked away and just left the kids out of his or her sight for just a minute, they would start chanting in unison, almost like robots, unsafe, unsafe, unsafe. They had been taught that without constant supervision, they were unsafe. And every aspect of this program, residentially,
educationally. That sounds like a sci-fi.
Yeah. And it was every aspect. It was educational. It was residential. It was clinical. And I took the job because I wanted to move up in the organization. Nobody wanted to work at this place because of, you know, basically what I just described. And I did it for a year. I followed their rules for a year. It was an absolute nightmare. I said, we're making these kids worse. And I, you know, I was just a young guy. I was like 23 years old, 24 years old. So I sought the help of the psychologist who was in charge of that program. And I said, I really think we should change things here. And I know, like, I feel like on my show, I tell these stories about myself in the past as if I was like some kind of visionary. I was really just lazy about doing things that made me feel shitty, you know, and I didn't want to do them anymore. So I don't know if I had like some kind of noble justification, but I said, can we change things? Because that was like the worst year of my life, just constantly fighting to keep these kids in line and to constantly supervise them and tell them they couldn't watch SpongeBob SquarePants because it was too risque. Like it was to that level. So the next year we just took all the restrictions off and we started a life skills curriculum, like very Sudbury like things. And at the time I was in graduate school, so I had come across Sudbury, but I really hadn't embraced it yet. It just was doing what felt right and doing what felt natural with other human beings, which was not trying to control them, which was not telling them that I don't trust you, you shouldn't even trust yourself. We loosened all the restrictions. We started a newspaper for the whole school, which we had been isolated from. They all had jobs. We did life skills curriculum. And in that year, everything changed for me, especially. I mean, that's the person that honestly I was the most concerned about. I was no good to the environment if I was miserable. I wasn't going to help anybody else. And I think a lot of the kids got positive benefits out of it as well. So as years went on and I started to discover a lot of the things that you talked about in the video and a lot of the benefits of Sudbury that you talked about, I felt really vindicated where I was just, you know, being lazy about following the school's rules. Turned us out that was actually the right thing to do.
So
I appreciate that message every time I hear it. That's Sudbury. I think we can talk a little bit more about Sudbury because the philosophy is interesting. I still don't know exactly how I feel about it. But what did you think of like Sudbury compared to traditional homeschooling or even unschooling you talk about in the video as well?
Initially, okay, first thing. Sudbury and homeschooling and unschooling address two very different problems because some parents can't homeschool or unschool because they don't have the time, they've got jobs or whatever. So they address very different problems. I think that one thing that Sudbury does, which is quite cool that isn't really as easily done in unschooling or homeschooling is to give people a microcosm of the real world, having what is essentially a kind of a government running the school, and it gives everyone an opportunity to feel what it's like to be a part of that kind of system and to be able to significantly change your environment. That might happen in some like groups of people who don't unschooling or whatever. I don't know if they have that kind of democratic thing, but being a part of a very real and important democratic system that can have significant effects on other people's and other students' and teachers' lives, I think that that's something that's I've never seen anywhere else, but seems hugely valuable.
This was our debate about it on my show, because obviously that's so superior to the traditional model of schooling, right? For kids to have a voice. But the question that I had, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, it seems to, at least as far as Sudbury schools in this country, translating to participation in government are concerned, it seems to set up some unrealistic expectations. In Sudbury, you have a voice that's equal to everybody else participating in that democratic process. In the political system that scales up from that, people don't have that voice. That idea that it's one man, one vote is unrealistic. Now, there's also the idea that, well, maybe that problem that we face in this country is because of how people were schooled in this non-Sudbury-like way, where they don't really have any respect for that system. They let their voices be overrun by others who are more connected or more powerful. But I'm not sold on the idea that what most people want in the scale of like a whole nation is the best thing to do. Because a lot of things happen here that are not what most people want, because they're decisions made by very small groups of people who were elected by maybe 20% of everybody who can vote or everybody in the country. But then it's like a stamp of approval because we have that democratic process. Whatever elected people do basically becomes the fault of the voters. And I just don't know if I'm sold on that. How do you feel about that?
First of all, this is getting way out of the scope of school, so I do not have that much experience here. But I think about this kind of stuff a lot. I really like the idea of a government that's based more on electing issues rather than electing people.
Like so referendums. If
there was a website or whatever where people could rank the issues that they cared about, or even rank their priorities. So if they cared more about saving people's lives than about maintaining a culture, then that all you would do is input what value you attribute to each of these things somehow. And it would say, okay, according to science, these are the things that were most effective to keep your priorities in order. But like, that's not going to happen anytime soon. So I feel that in order to try and change systems, giving like the idea of a Sudbury democratic kind of thing, It gives people passion about what they do more so than they might have. Like, this is just a guess, but it feels like it would give people passion if they see things actually working in their school and things changing according to what they contribute, compared to not seeing anything change ever and always being stopped whenever you try to think creatively.
I like the idea that it takes away apathy, or maybe it stops apathy from ever even developing. Like, how apathetic are most people after they go through 15,000 hours, at least that's what it turns into in this country, of asking permission to speak and go to the bathroom? When you move beyond that, that's a lot of training you've endured. And you never really feel like you have any power in that system. So why would you feel like you have power in some larger system outside of it? Sudbury, because you are participating, that apathy for a lot of those kids might never develop, which is like a huge benefit, I would think.
I wonder if there's been a study done where people have looked at people who grew up in alternative schools and see whether they are more politically inclined, more likely to vote or things like that. Because you could find that out.
So the studies are, again, very limited, as you noted. In Massachusetts, it produced a lot of people who were very politically left. But that actually isn't an accurate indicator for Sudbury because Massachusetts is generally very politically left. So a lot of the Sudbury schools that sprang up in the northeastern part of the United States, which is traditionally, you know, the left side of the political spectrum, Sudbury produced people who were also on that side of the spectrum politically.
Well, their parents, but their parents probably were. If they're going to do that kind of thing. So
yeah,
that's going to have a factor. I was thinking more about the, like, rather than the side of the political spectrum, whether they are apathetic about politics or whatever.
The reason why I brought that up, that they lean to the left of the political spectrum, is because in this country, those are the people who typically believe that more things can be achieved politically. On the right, there's more of a lack of faith in the political system or the government's ability to solve problems. I don't put myself on the political right. I'm sympathetic to that view because of, you know, working in a boarding school and watching how, you know, children who were under the care of different state governments were actually treated, like being put on drugs and treated very much like animals, or in some cases, even just like things that needed to be stored somewhere. That cost me a lot of my faith in government solutions to problems. But again, why I bring up that most people lean left is those are people who tend to be more active in political solutions. It's especially true with young people. I don't know if that's the case in Great Britain, but it's certainly the case in the United States. But without even bringing the political spectrum here into it, I think, yes, that was a very long answer to a very simple question. People who go through Sudbury are more engaged politically. A lot of them do go on to not just become politically active, but also they follow intellectual pursuits. Some of them even become academics, which can be a plus or can be, you know, a minus, depending on what you're doing and why.
That's really cool. I'd like to see those studies after this is done.
This is not totally school related, but you really piqued my interest with something you said a few minutes ago about having a system where people input what's important to them. Is that something you put a lot of thought into? Because that's very interesting to me. And I'd like to hear you talk about it just for
sure.
A minute or two.
Yeah, like I really like thinking about this kind of thing. What's the most efficient way to run a society? First of all, getting people to vote on people, we've already explained, is not necessarily going to get them the best result that they want, because people can change their minds and then they fall out of favor and it's too late. They've elected someone for 4 years who isn't following what they want. Then the next step might be, let's vote on issues then. Like, people can vote, do you want to do something about climate change? Like, do you want to focus on this one specific solution? And people might be like, yeah, okay, let's do that. But not everyone has done all the research on climate change. Not everyone knows the most efficient ways, according to science, to fix it. So just saying, I want to not die, and then science says, okay, here are the things that are probably going to cause you to die. Here are the things that will probably prevent that. Then that is what you want. So the issue then is, it's going to be a nightmare to make sure those studies that cause all that kind of data to exist are accurate, because there's a lot of incentive to change the studies to redirect government funds. I don't know if I'm making any sense whatsoever right now. Sorry.
It's really, really, it's really, really interesting, and it's really, really making me think, because it's like, if there was a way. And I'm not even proposing this as a form of government. It's just an interesting thought experiment. If there was a way to, instead of just saying, this many people said they want this, and that's more than this other group of people, so now we get this. To me, there's nothing really legitimate about that. Just a majority of people want something, because throughout history, a majority of people have proven to be pretty poorly informed, you know? I mean, that's just, it might not sound nice, but those are the facts. So why should their will prevail over a smaller group of people who know more? So if there was a way to wait...
Kind of like a meritocracy, I suppose you're discussing that, where people who are more educated, like scientists, would run things because they know they've done their research into it. Is that the kind of idea?
all these ideas are scary because it all comes back to power. And
yeah, and then you've got crazy powerful scientists who might get really huge egos or whatever.
Yeah, and power is something that is just, however it's justified, it almost always winds up being abused. It's very, very difficult for me to engage in thought experiments about ideal forms of government, but information should be at least the thing that drives important policies, you know? One of the things that I see, this was actually one of my issues about Sudbury. Are you familiar with constructivism?
No.
So the guy who founded Sudbury, his name was Daniel Greenberg. And in the United States, like up until they had this free school revolution in like the 60s and the 70s, everything here in education was behaviorism, which was like B.F. Skinner, the guy who spent all his life, like Pavlov was an earlier version. Yeah. So people who spent all their time with like pigeons and rats and dogs and then like looked at those observations and said, okay, now let's make a bunch of rules for human beings. So school was very much this kind of human beings are stimulus response. They're basically these animals that are programmable. I mean, that was the idea. And that produced a certain kind of education, not just in the Prussian schools, but around the world. And that was the prevailing idea, psychological idea in education until this free school revolution that the Sudbury people brought in this counter to behaviorism, the idea that there should be a top-down method, like there should be a teacher at the front of the room who tells students what to do, and that's how knowledge is disseminated. The constructivist was more student-centered. So it became this debate between a couple of useful rhymes, sage on the stage versus guide on the side, that education in the constructivist model should be more learner driven versus like top down. I'm the teacher. Do what I say. And there's a lot of positive benefits to that model because it increases engagement. I think in a lot of the ways you'd really like, especially, you know, considering how you feel about Sudbury. And Sudbury is based on constructivism. The problem is, it seems like there was this misunderstanding of it, at least in how it was applied to education here. A lot of instructors came to believe that they should never tell students anything, but instead, like, students were always just left to construct their own knowledge. But you have this problem of, like, based on what? Now, that's not an accurate interpretation of constructivism, but that's one of the problems that's come with it. It's just like knowledge can be whatever you want it to be. It showed up in public schools. And it's also shown up in a cliche that we use here a lot in the States. Everyone's entitled to their own opinion. What's built into that is this idea that you're also entitled to have that opinion taken seriously. Which, I mean, if you just take that to its logical conclusion, I think the earth is hollow. I wear this foil on my head because yeah. I think there's aliens inside. And a lot of subjectivity emerges in places where we actually need objectivity, where facts do exist. And everybody might be entitled to feel however they want about something without, you know, being thrown in jail for it or whatever. But they're not necessarily entitled to be taken seriously or treated equally to the guy who doesn't wear tinfoil on his head and has a PhD in astrophysics. So that was, I think, one of the reasons why I initially was a little bit skeptical of Sudbury, because there's too much subjectivity in it. A lot of people saw it as being kind of wishy-washy. But it still, I think, is better for learners to be able to be active participants in their own education. School just took, the public schools here just took the worst of both the top-down and the constructivist. It's like, we're still going to have the authoritarian at the front of the room, but all knowledge is subjective, right? Which is just a complete mess. So nobody is getting like concrete objective knowledge, and they're still not being active participants in their own education.
I kind of get a feeling that you're talking about in Sudbury schools, you don't know what you don't know kind of thing. And so a lot of people are not necessarily learning a lot of incredibly useful things because they haven't been directed towards them. Is that the kind of thing you mean?
I don't see. I don't like that idea, because learning requires intrinsic motivation, right? So to be intrinsically motivated, you have to be doing what you want. But there also has to be some kind of check, which is like, what are you getting? You know, are you on the right track? And I just wasn't able to see when I was at Sudbury how the people who worked there were able to be objective guides for all of the different learners in that environment. I mean, it was great because they were outnumbered like 10 to 1 adults to kids. And I think it's totally fine in an environment like that.
From what I saw, and like I was talking to that girl who went to the Sudbury school, when people felt that they didn't know something, they went to find experts who could give them that kind of information. And then they did have the intrinsic motivation. I imagine if there was some kind of syllabus built that everyone kind of, the Wikipedia style, like upgraded and adapted over time, said these are very useful things that the majority of people think are useful. If that kind of thing was a really prominent resource in the system and kids were informed that it existed and said, if you want to learn things that people think are useful, here are some of them. Like, do you want to learn first aid? Kids are probably going to be like, yeah, I'd like to save someone's life.
Yeah.
So like if they're given the kind of direction rather than being forced into doing it, I think that the majority are going to want to learn those kinds of things because they want to be a helpful member of society, just like everyone else.
Yeah, well, I'm happy to hear that they're going out and seeking experts. And I think a lot of people who are, you know, on that intrinsically motivated educational path, they're also doing it with some kind of goal in mind, right? Or some kind of result in mind beyond just get an A, have a good report card, graduate, get into college. There's something that they value as an outcome that they want to achieve. And it's not like they get to some completely different outcome or they're trying to build something and they wind up with something completely different and they just sprinkle pixie dust and say, this was my goal. You know, that's not what they're doing. So the objectivity, subjectivity debate that's been around these different modes of education for a long time, I think there's ways to overcome it. And I'm happy to hear that that's happening because, you know, intrinsically motivated people, they want results for their efforts. And this is actually something, you know, that you talked a lot about in another video that I'm going to link in the show notes called The Happiness Experiment. We probably won't have time to discuss it today, but I want people in my audience to watch it. And maybe I can get you back on the show in the future to discuss that importance of intrinsic motivation. It's interesting that in this video, you actually discovered intrinsic motivation by threatening yourself financially, which I thought was quite fascinating.
I think it was quite extrinsic, like the motivation there.
Initially, but then it seems like your process of discovery actually led you to this importance of doing things for yourself. Are you still doing that experiment? Is that still ongoing?
I am, yeah. It's pretty stressful. I've adapted it quite a bit. I'll probably make a video about the adaptations and stuff because I wanted to see if I could make it more flexible so I wasn't as like constantly stressed in certain circumstances.
Yeah.
But I'm experimenting with different systems to see what works best for me.
Well, we've definitely devoted a lot of time to that here at School Sucks Project. So I encourage you to check it out as a resource. You just go and search for productivity. And after you make that video about adaptations, maybe we could do another conversation if you have the time where we could talk about that a little bit.
If your audience aren't sick of my high-pitched laugh, then sure.
They love you. You were like the hottest thing a year ago in our Facebook group. Everybody was crazy about
your
video.
Oh, yay. Thank you.
So when you resurfaced and you had this much longer video, a lot of people were sending it to me and saying, get this guy on the show this time. I'm really glad. And again, I just want to reiterate it. I think you and I probably have lots of differences of opinion and we come from very different places and we probably feel very differently about.
Yeah, I'm not really sure about the short hair thing you got going on.
Oh, no hair. No hair. I shaved it. Can you imagine?
See, there's the fundamental difference in our personalities.
Right. Well, despite, you know, these two divergent backgrounds and, you know, all the different ways we might think about things, I have a great, great appreciation for what you're doing. And I think it's amazing the amount of people that you've reached and you know, the connections you've made and the message that you've delivered in favor of educational freedom. So you have a lot of supporters from my crowd to certainly continue on that mission, and we would be happy to have you back to talk about anything. Can you tell my audience how they can find you if they haven't found you yet?
Sure. If you go to YouTube/boyinaband, youtube.com/boyinaband, I'll be there. Or if you just search for Boy in a Band.
Thanks again, Dave. I really appreciate your time. I know things are very regimented for you.
So, yeah, recently particularly.
Well, we definitely look forward to seeing what you do next.
Well, thanks very much. That means a lot. Cheers for having me on the show.
My pleasure.
Okay. That's a nice pipe. Oh, hello. Welcome. Let me check your appointment then. Right here, written in ballpoint pen. Now it's gonna get a little bit hectic from here, so point your head down toward the ground and follow the point men. Let Dave explain. We're getting to the point of no return, can't save your game. There's no checkpoint on the way, and if you don't observe, you'll be held at gunpoint. Point blank, forfeiting all your points, man. Withdraw it from the cash point to the wall, I'm forced to put it all in my point bank. Don't feel guilt, there's no point crying over spilled milk. With a little bit of luck, I can cover it up smoothly like I did with a silk quilt. What's the point of this? For the sake of art, man, point to this. Don't take it hard, it's point to this. So enjoy the ride and find the like and then point to click. Let me point out you're avoiding the stats. You know that put a point on a graph, had a pacifistic standpoint to the past, but time's changed, man. So we're pointing a lap when a point in a gat and a pinpoint accurate center of attention. Midpoint master and would appoint you apprentice if it wasn't so hard to be this pretentious. Dave, that selling point isn't the best. Well, thanks, I never forget that point. Dexter, but when I loudly voice my point of view, it's counterpoint. You sing a different tune because I never want to be a bit of a disappointment, so I'll point out if I'll point at the poignant, because I'm actually nice, like when my Irish friend says, fancy a point.
No.